probably most of us in this room think that we are reasonably smart. We don't say that to anyone, but inside we think we are. Basically, most adults, I guess, think we know how to handle things, we know how to manage our lives. One day there was a very nice lady who went for a walk. She was alone. She noticed a tree. The fruit on it was ripe. It looked tasty, and she thought it would make her wise. And everybody wants to be smarter than they are. Her human wisdom told her, be smart, eat it, and you'll be smarter than ever. Well, it wasn't her tree. She was stealing, and it did not make her smart. It made her a thief and a fool and a sinner against God. We all want to be wise in planning our careers. We want to be wise in our investments. We want to be wise in raising our children, make wise decisions when we buy cars and houses and insurance. And our human wisdom tells us that we're smart enough to make good choices and do the right thing. We never tell anybody we're smart, but we think we are. A man named John Walker, no relation, wrote a letter to a restaurant. In the letter, he said that one of the waiters had spilled a drink on his new sports coat, and he expected the restaurant to pay the dry cleaning bill, which was $9.20, and he included the cleaning bill in his letter. He sent the same letter to 100,000 restaurants. 100,000 times $9.20 is almost $1 million. He was a clever fellow. Paul Bordeleau is a hockey coach in Fredericton, New Brunswick. He believes that practical jokes will build a team spirit, so he arranges for his hockey team to take every new rookie player on a snipe hunt. The other players take the rookie to some game preserve where it's illegal to be. They show him what he's supposed to do, and they leave him there in the middle of the night. The coach arranges with the local police to happen to go by the game preserve, find this new player, arrest him for trespassing and poaching. They take him to the police station, charge him with breaking the law, fingerprint him, and put him in jail. A few hours later, before daylight, the coach shows up at the jailhouse, bails out the player, takes him to the clubhouse where the team is waiting and laughing. Clever guy, that hockey coach. One more. There was a man who needed an apartment, and he found the deal of a lifetime. He found a house with a sign out on the lawn, rent to own. The owner was an elderly woman who wanted someone to rent her house until she died, and then the house would be theirs. Her price was higher than other places to rent, but what a deal. She was 90 years old. How long could she last? A few months, a couple of years, and then he would own the house. What a sharp businessman. He signed the contract. And human wisdom is notoriously short-sighted. Probably we're not quite as smart as we think we are sometimes. The man who mailed out the 100,000 fake dry cleaning bills planned to collect $920,000. Only 20 restaurants sent him the 920. He collected a total of $184, and he had spent $32,000 on postage. Coach Bordeleau, last year, this hockey coach in Canada pulled that snipe hunt deal on his star rookie goalie. But before the coach could get to the jail to bail him out, the rookie player got so mad, he punched the wall, broke several bones in his hand, and he's out for the season. And the man who planned to rent and make a few rent payments and own his own home, he paid higher than usual rent bills for 30 years before death finally broke the contract. After paying rent for 30 years, he died at age 100. And she was 120, and on her lawn, again, a sign that said rent to own. There are two kinds of wisdom in our world. There is real wisdom and there is counterfeit wisdom. In 1 Corinthians 2, the Apostle Paul is explaining the difference. In the passage that Eddie read and the following verses, Paul is comparing human wisdom and God's wisdom. Paul's point is this. There are important things which a man's wisdom does not know and could never discover. But God is gracious to us, and he has revealed true wisdom through inspired men. That's Paul's message in this chapter. Paul explained that as simply as he could, but God's supernatural activity is not easy for a man to explain or to understand. So the chapter is a challenge. In verses 1 through 5, Paul first reminded the Corinthians of those early days when he first came to their city. From the first day, Paul had demonstrated that he had something new that had never been in Corinth before. He had wisdom from God. Paul was highly educated, more than most men in his generation. He was way above average intelligence. And Paul knew in his mind, when you go to a city, what would please people, what would entertain people, what would attract a crowd. But he ignored human wisdom. He reminded them that he had not come to Corinth in the beginning with any kind of a theatrical production, no citywide crusade, no impressive oratory, no super salesmanship. Paul had given no attention to popular appeal. The Corinthians knew that was true. When they met Paul, they were not particularly impressed with him. He was alone. He was broke. He was asking for a job. He wasn't feeling well. Basically, he looked weak, didn't seem to be sure of himself. In verse 3, Paul reminded them that he had come to them in weakness. He said, you remember when I came? In weakness, in fear, in trembling. Remember? Who was Paul afraid of? No one, no. But earlier, the Son of God had instructed him to tell the Gentile nations of the world the story of the cross of Jesus. And Paul's fear was that he might fail in doing that. He was not afraid of them. He came in fear, but he's not afraid of them. He's afraid for them. He knew they were lost eternally. He knew that the gospel that he brought was their only hope. Why had Paul trembled when he came to Corinth? I'd say nervous tension, stress. There was a lot at stake. Could this man do what God had asked him and charged him to do? He felt very inadequate. He was not concerned for himself. He was concerned for the work, for the mission, for the people. He was run down. He was discouraged. And I love this about this man. He feared that his condition might somehow prejudice people against the gospel. And so I really try not to be offensive to people or let anything about me as a person prejudice people against the Lord. And that's why I wear a necktie. I hate neckties. And I always wear one when I come here on Sunday, because some people might think it extremely casual and inappropriate for me to stand here without a necktie. And so because I don't like them at all, but I don't want anything I do to distract, if I possibly can know that and change it about some things I can't change, but I try. And Paul said, I didn't want my condition to prejudice you against him. So Paul trusted the wisdom of God. He spent no time trying to be clever, trying to be popular. Instead, he kept telling men and women the story of the cross and about a God who loved them. They'd never heard that before. They didn't know there was such a God. The Bible says there are two kinds of wisdom. There is type A wisdom and type B wisdom. Type A wisdom is wisdom from above, wisdom from heaven, wisdom revealed by God. Type B wisdom is from below, from down here, wisdom of this world. And a peculiar thing about type B wisdom, it always sounds impressive. It sounds right, but it never works. It's counterfeit. It's deceptive. Eve went for a walk through the garden by herself with her human wisdom. And her human type B wisdom led her to believe that she could eat that fruit and get smart. Instead, she got sick and died from that. Verse 2. Paul had received type A wisdom from above. He wasn't worthy, he knew it, but God had given him type A wisdom from heaven. He told men and women everywhere about Jesus and the cross. In verse 2, we have Paul's whole ministry, his whole adult life, wrapped up in one sentence. Here's what the Apostle Paul is all about. Here's what he did with his life. Here's why he suffered for 30 years. I am determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And that's all there is. There was no sugar coating. It was a story about blood and death and human sacrifice. Paul came to Corinth and he told them a story about an innocent man who died because they were guilty of doing awful things. The story of the cross is always offensive when you first hear it. The Jews didn't like it. It was disgusting. The Gentiles didn't like it. But the cross is the wisdom of God. Here's God's problem. We have an earth full of people who are out of bounds, doing wrong things, going the wrong direction. And God has this challenge, problem before him of what to do about it. Going to try to pacify it, going to try to entertain them, impress them? No. God's problem is try to change them, try to transform their lives. So back in ancient Europe, the Apostle Paul came preaching Jesus Christ. It was effective. Many crude Corinthians were transformed into new people. They had been living by type B wisdom from below, and some of them had been drunkards, and some of them had been thieves. That's where type B wisdom leads, just dead end streets. Some of them had been homosexuals. Some of them had been adulterers. Some of them had been worshipers of idols. Some of them had been swindlers. But they aren't anymore. Because God's wisdom, wrapped up in what Jesus did and the record of it, changes men and women. They had been changed by the story of the cross. It was a simple story, but it had an awesome impact. It made new people out of them. In verse 5, their lives were different. Their lives were good, and it wasn't B wisdom that changed them. It was God's wisdom from above. Today in America, you and I live in a place that is polluted with type B wisdom from below. It's widespread. It's everywhere. In Popular Mechanics magazine for next month, which is already on the market, Popular Mechanics says, "Science solves the ancient mysteries of the Bible." This is the cover story on Popular Mechanics. I read the article with fascination. Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt? No, not that. What happened was there was an earthquake, and the earthquake caused the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to fall into the Dead Sea. This caused a tidal wave which laps up on the shore and drowned Lot's wife. And the same tidal wave brought up on the shore a woman-sized rock stone formation. And he looked back and thought that stone was her. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead? No. We know now. Science has solved the mysteries of the Bible. What happened was Lazarus was in a coma. And we've learned finally that people in a coma often have one of their five senses that still works, and that's their hearing. Lots of people in a coma can still hear. And so assuming that Jesus had a loud voice, Lazarus, the only thing he can do is hear, and Jesus called out loudly, and that stirred Lazarus and woke him up, and he came back. A burning bush that was not consumed? No. It just looked that way. What really happened was there was natural gas seeping out of the ground behind the bush. Lightning ignited the gas that was escaping, and there was like a little fire back there. And Moses was standing at such an angle that when he looked at the bush, he saw the fire behind it, and he thought the bush was burning but wasn't being consumed, but the bush wasn't really burning at all. It just looked that way. Type B wisdom. Human wisdom teaches evolution. Human wisdom laughs at God's book. Human wisdom recommends counseling instead of conversion to solve people's problems. Human wisdom fails to see any connection at all between social problems in America and morality. Type A wisdom, a wisdom that comes from God, is so powerful it can change people and change their lives for good, even when the messenger is weak and trembling. If that is true, if that is still true, where does that leave people like you and me who are timid and shy and feel inadequate? I really don't want you to miss that. I'm going to say that again. Type A wisdom, wisdom from God, is so powerful, it will change people's lives for good, even when the messenger is weak and trembling. If that's true, if that is still true, where does that leave people like you and me who are shy, timid, feel inadequate? In verses 6 through 9, the Apostle Paul explained again that the message he preached was supernaturally revealed. His message was type A wisdom from God. Paul described God's wisdom in different ways in these verses. In verse 7, he called it a mystery, meaning that God's wisdom was there before the creation of the world, and men didn't have a clue about it after they were created. God's wisdom was undiscoverable by human efforts, including the scientists that write for Popular Mechanics. God's wisdom was of such a nature and in such a place, they didn't even have access to it. They couldn't discover what it was. In the early days when white men began to settle in upstate New York, they discovered that there was salt in Onondaga Lake. Salt is valuable. People began to migrate to the central New York area in large numbers. They bought up all the land around Onondaga Lake, believing that they would become wealthy from the salt mines. So many people came that the little settlement on the lake became a city, and they called it Syracuse. But they searched and they searched and they searched their land, and they could find no salt. Years later, they learned that even though Syracuse is called Salt City, there's no salt there. It was discovered that the salt in Onondaga Lake was not from the immediate area, but it had washed into the area from a stream coming out of the high hill country to the south. And the speculators bought up all that land, and there was no salt there after all. They were looking for an answer in the wrong place. And men had not been able to discover the wisdom of God because its source was not in this world. It was in eternity. It was in the heart of God. And get this, when God in his graciousness finally sent type A wisdom into human history in the person of his son, type B wisdom killed him. And Paul wrote in verse 8 that human wisdom crucified the Lord of glory. In verse 9, Paul quoted the Old Testament prophet Isaiah. May I paraphrase? Isaiah said, "No man ever saw, and no man ever heard, and no man ever imagined what the wisdom of God had prepared for people who love him." Nobody expected crucifixion and resurrection. Nobody on earth expected God would send his son to die to pay for my guilt so that I can be free forever. Who would have guessed that? Mankind has three channels whereby to acquire knowledge. There are three different ways to get it inside of us. One is through our eyes. One is through our ears. One is through our mind, our heart, perhaps. And Paul and Isaiah are saying no man's eyes, no man's ears, no man's heart ever scratched the surface when it comes to knowing the wisdom from above. God had prepared things which no man would ever guess, like sacrificing his son in our place, like forgiving us if we would obey his son and wiping the record clean. Who would have ever guessed it or imagined it? These things were hidden in the heart of God since before the foundation of the world. Man had no clue. Couldn't learn that. What does Casey and Linda's unborn child know about the beauty of snow or the joy of marriage? What does their unborn child know about the taste of chocolate or the pleasure of music or the exhilaration of laughter or the peace of being forgiven for what you did wrong. All of these things are far beyond the world of the prenatal child. In much the same way, no sinner on earth, no human being ever dreamed that there was a God who would take care of us if we placed our reliance on Him. It never entered man's mind. The enemies of Israel in the Old Testament did not fear the God of the Israelites because it never entered their minds that there was such a God as Jehovah. Today, the evolutionist, the abortionist, the unbelievers have no fear of God because they don't think there is anyone like that. Their type B wisdom has no knowledge of a living God. Now we need to pause here for an academic exercise. If you have your copy of 1 Corinthians 2 open, there is a significant something that changes at chapter 2, verse 6. And it continues through the end of the chapter, and then it switches back to the way it was in the beginning of the chapter of the book. In chapter 1 and in the first five verses of chapter 2, the personal pronoun is I, almost without exception. But at chapter 2, verse 6, the personal pronoun is changed to we, and it remains we through the remaining verses until we get to chapter 3. And when Paul wrote the pronoun we in this paragraph, he was referring specifically and exclusively to that group of men to whom God had revealed wisdom from above. We in this passage means we inspired apostles only. The reason for this change to the plural pronoun is that Paul is telling the Corinthians how it was that God got true wisdom, wisdom from heaven, into the human experience. In verse 6, look, we speak wisdom, we apostles, guided by the Spirit of God. Verse 7, we speak God's wisdom, that's we apostles. In verse 10, for to us God revealed them through the Spirit, to us apostles. And in verse 16 at the end of the chapter, we have the mind of Christ. We apostles to whom God revealed the total and complete special revelation to mankind. God's way of making His wisdom known to people was to reveal type A wisdom to selected men. Exactly how God did that is hard to understand. It's hard to describe. Paul, from here on now, is going to stretch human language to try to explain what God did. In verse 11, Paul illustrated as best he could. He said it's kind of like this. He's saying, let's compare the Spirit of God to the spirit of man, to any man or woman's spirit. Who knows what another person is thinking? Who knows your thoughts and your motives and your daydreams? Who can know that? Well, nobody. Only you, nobody else. Like, who knows what Tom Swart is thinking right now? Well, we don't know what Tom Swart is thinking right now. And with an MRI machine or with a CAT scan or with the most skilled surgeon who ever lived doing brain surgery, there is no way for anybody ever to find out what another man is thinking. Now, if Tom revealed his thoughts to us, then we would know. But apart from such a revelation, it is utterly impossible. And Paul said, it's like that. It's like that. Even so, the Spirit of God, who knows the hearts and the thought of God the Father, revealed them. In verse 10, Paul said, the Spirit searches all things, even the depths of God. Can you feel Paul straining to try to express this? The Spirit did not search God's heart for something the Spirit did not know. The Spirit isn't trying to put two and two together and see what's going on in God's mind. There's nothing beyond the knowledge of the Spirit of God who is at one with the Father. But Paul has to use some verb here to try to picture the Spirit's activity. This searching is more like one timeless act wherein the Spirit penetrated the depths of all that God knows, all the billions and billions of things that God knows. The point is that the Spirit knows everything God knows, like my spirit knows everything I know. That's what Paul is saying. And look what happens in verse 12. Here's how the apostles acquired this divine wisdom from above. It wasn't through their eyes or their ears or their imagination that they got this. In verse 12, we have received not the spirit of this world, but the spirit who is from God, that we might know the things freely given to us apostles, by God. This was God's divine communication process, which resulted in divine inspiration. My understanding is that Paul is telling us in chapter 2 of Corinthians how the Bible came to be an infallible text. In verse 13, for the third time, Paul wrote, we apostles speak to this world and to the church on behalf of God himself. My understanding is that the primary ministry of the Holy Spirit was to be a revealer, to help us know what we couldn't know, what was not even accessible to us. But he revealed it from the heart of God. The Spirit is responsible for the transmission of God's truth in God's heart to the apostles' words, both verbal and written. Now, we're almost finished. In verses 14 and 15, I have read and heard an interpretation of these verses which is very popular, but I don't believe it. I used to believe it, and that's because I listened to what other people said, and I had not done my homework. I hadn't examined it carefully. But I don't believe it anymore. The common view is, in verses 14 and 15, that the natural man is a sinner, an unbeliever, who cannot understand spiritual things, but the spiritual man, or a Christian, can appraise or judge or assess all things correctly. Now, I don't think that's what Paul meant at all. Christians have been known to be wrong in their judgments and their appraisals about many things. In this context, what I think is true is the spiritual man is another reference to the inspired apostles, and the natural man is all the rest of us. It seems to me that the natural man is here contrasted with the supernatural men who are inspired and guided by the Spirit of God. The natural man is a physical man left to his own human wisdom. As such, he is unable to know the things of God until he receives the revelation from God. Well, it's time to conclude. Do you understand why Paul wrote all of this? He wanted men to quit following other men, and he wanted to help us see the wisdom of following no one but Jesus Christ himself. The natural man is not prepared to judge or appraise or discern eternal matters. We will do well to put our trust in wisdom type A from above, which God revealed, to rescue us from our situation. Type B wisdom always looks good, but it never works. And the strange thing, the wisdom that came from God from above, it hardly ever looks good. Usually doesn't even make sense when you hear it, but it's true. Type B wisdom, the kind that we have among ourselves down here, our best effort, type B wisdom says, don't take anything from anybody. Don't let anybody walk on you. You have a right to demand your rights. Don't let anybody get away with anything. If anybody hurts you, you make them hurt. You have a right to. Who do they think they are? That's type B wisdom. Sounds right. That's the way I used to treat my five brothers. Boy, they did something to me. I planned to get even. I did what I could. If they made me hurt, they hurt. That just sounded right. And as an adult, it still sounded right. Type B wisdom always sounds right, but it won't work. Now, type A wisdom is different. Type A wisdom, do not seek revenge. Someone hurts you, pray for him. Repay evil by doing good to the people who were evil toward you. Turn the other cheek. See, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any worldly sense. So last year in Detroit, Preacher Bill's topic was forgiving others who do us wrong. And the preacher said that we should forgive other people for what they've done to us, no matter if they ask for our forgiveness or not. Grudge against a former business partner who had cheated him out of money 20 years earlier, and he had lived with this grudge for 20 years. The sermon was clear and it was biblical. The man knew he should forgive, but he didn't want to. He actually couldn't. It was $30,000. He'd been cheated out of $30,000 by his partner. Later that his ex-business partner who had cheated him out of $30,000 was in that same service and heard that same sermon. And he knew what he needed to do. And so the next day after that sermon was preached, the swindler looked up the man he had cheated, went to his office, and said, "I know what I did was wrong. I'm sorry. And I don't deserve it, but I am asking you to forgive me." And he handed his former partner, whom he had cheated, a check for $40,000 for principal and interest. Most of the stories that I have heard in my life of hurt and pain don't end that way. Because even when Christian men and women do finally decide that they'll not go on bearing the grudge and they forgive the other person, even when they do that, very often the other person goes on living by B-type wisdom, which says humility is for the weak, and they won't accept the forgiveness anyway. But God's wisdom is, it is wise to do what's right no matter what they do. Today there are two types of wisdom competing for our minds. Paul figured that it was worth his lifetime of 30 years of suffering while he preached if he could tell other people about the cross and about the heart of God. Paul committed himself to this, of proclaiming wisdom revealed from heaven, that there is a living God who had committed himself to give his son to die for us even before we were born. How's that make you feel? To know God did that for you. I am a Christian. I am not a Christian today because I was influenced by clever speeches when I was young and impressionable. I am not a Christian today because I was really impressed and overcome by a glamorous church program in Hopedale, Ohio. I am a Christian because I recognized myself as a sinful person who needed to be forgiven or he had no hope. That's how I got to be where I am. The story of Jesus dying on a cross for my sin drew me back to a God who loved me, whom I had disobeyed. He offered to erase my past. He offered to give me a brand new life, starting with a new birth of water and spirit. Are you a Christian? Have you accepted the forgiveness of God on his terms, or are you still living by type B wisdom, which says, "I'm kind of a decent person. I haven't done anything really that bad, and I've tried to make up for some of my wrong, and I'm doing the best I can. I'm probably okay with God." You still live by type B wisdom? Or would you trust God and his infallible word and put yourself in his hands? On the basis of what his son did, God invites anybody who will to come to him for total, complete forgiveness of everything you've ever done and to be welcomed into his family forever. I mean, when you hear that, you just have to decide what you're going to do about it. It's hymn number 296 that speaks of these things, and I would like to invite you to stand and sing with us as you consider your relationship to the God who made you and wants to forgive you. 296, will you stand, please, as we sing the first verse?
I will sing the wondrous story of the Christ who died for me, how he left his home in glory for the cross.